everyone, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Jerry.
And today we have another installment of So You Want to Play Magic. So last week we got to talk about the wonders of set rotation, all the different constructed formats you could play, well, a majority of them I should say, and basic deck construction, as well as the different archetypes. Today we're going a little bit different though, because as we've said before, there are multiple ways you can play Magic, and we're going to be discussing about the limited ways and what is limited, and then what are the sub-formats of limited. We're also going to be talking about different ways you can play online, because as we know, you know, in-person play, sadly, is still restricted here in North America, Latin America, and that. So we're going to have to, you know, make do with what we can online. And then we're also going to see, once the pandemic is over, I'm a new player, how do I find a local game store, and the best way to go about buying, selling, and trading cards. So, let's get into this. Jerry, what is this limited format?
Alright, so limited is best explained as a format where you build decks out of packs. It's the original way the game was supposed to be played. You would open up a pack of cards, and you would a series of packs of cards, and you would build decks this way. There are two primary ways of limited as for competitive play. They are draft and sealed. Limited draft is when you open up a booster pack, you pick a card out of it, and you pass the pack to a person, and you'll pass these packs as you take individual cards from them in this ring of players. Usually it's about 8 players. Sometimes an LGS has a weird number of people, so you may end up having 7 people sitting in a circle. You might have 9 people. You're going to build a deck this way. You pick a card, you pick the most powerful card or the one you like out of the set of cards you have, take it, pass the pack, and then your opponent to your whatever side that they declare that you're passing to passes his to you, and you pick another card. You continue this way until you've gone through 3 packs of cards entirely. This way you have, on average, 45 cards, and you build a 40-card deck out of that. Then you have sealed. Sealed's a lot easier to explain. You have 6 booster packs. Build the deck. In limited play at LGSs that support it, they have basic land pools available for the entire store to use. They'll have, like, 400, 500 of each of the basic lands, so you don't have to worry about supplying those yourself.
Yep, and it's a pretty fun way. And the sealed actually is something a lot of us are familiar with, but we don't call it sealed. We call it pre-release. This is a form of limited. I'm getting those amount of packs, but also you get a bonus seeded pack. Sometimes, depending on the set, you'll get something additional. Now, when it comes to a actual sealed event, though, that's not the case, is it, Jerry?
Correct, that is not the case. At higher levels, they'll crack the packs for you, and they will give you the pull of cards. You don't even open the packs. They already have them pre-written on a sheet of paper. All you do is you just check individually to see that you have those cards.
Yep, you'll go through and check it. And then also for your incredible high-level drafts, if you will, they'll open the packs, and they'll stamp the cards so you know that it was a draft pack card, and prevents cheating. And I think one of the most crazy scenarios we've seen is the foil Goyf being opened on draft.
Oh boy. Yeah, I remember that. Pascal Maynard was draft. He was in a Boros strategy in Modern Horizons. And he opened his pack, and he saw the foil Goyf. He actually kind of had a moment where he freaked out a little bit. He had the foil Goyf, and then the card he needed for his archetype, Burst Lightning. He controversially took the Goyf.
Yeah, and it's controversial because a lot of people say that he drafted for money at that point. And
I mean,
at that time,
right.
Yeah, foil Goyf was what, $600-$700, I think?
Almost 1,000 at that point.
And now what Pascal did with it, though, I'm fairly certain he put it up for auction and then donated a majority of the cash from that auction.
Yeah, he did that to, I think he kind of received a lot of backlash from the professional community saying, oh, that's not professional. Sure, I guess it's not professional. He definitely took the card that he did not need out of that pack, because the card he needed was that Burst Lightning, which he did not get.
Yep. But those are those sets. Now, when it comes to deck building in Sealed, it's a little bit different. Okay, you still have your curve you need to pay attention to. And you need to be careful about how many colors you go into. Because remember, your LGS is only allowed to supply basic lands. So mountain, plains, island, forest, and swamps.
Key thing to note here, they do not supply snow-covered basics. You have to draft those.
Yep.
They do not cover wastes for formats that care about wastes. You
Yeah.
have to draft those as well.
Yep. So when it comes to multiple colors, make sure that almost every set has a dual colored land, whether it's a tap land, a enter the battlefield gain life, we call them life gates, gates themselves, whatever it is, almost every set has that. And this is why in a lot of sets you see cards like Evolving Wilds constantly being printed. When a set is made, they really take into account how can this be played by itself. And that's why when analyzing sets, you'll see a lot of content creators say, this is a limited bomb, this is a draft bomb, but elsewhere, this card is not great. I would not play it anywhere else outside of draft or sealed. And it's just because compared to the other cards in the sealed pool, it's a very good card. But compared to the cards in the format, there are so many better things you could be doing with that much mana or in that mana spot.
Correct. When you have access to 500 cards, say for standard, versus the 45 that you're given out of these packs, it definitely changes the power level scene.
100%. And a great thing about limited formats is it's no longer who has the deeper pockets. It's all about who can do the best with what they have. Luck does come into it of what do you get in your packs, what gets passed to you. But also, there's a completely different skill set associated with draft and sealed.
Correct. You need to be able to evaluate creatures based on their limited playability rather than their constructed playability.
Yeah, so things like evasion, so flying is a huge thing when it comes to limited, because there's not going to be a lot of creatures with reach, which is a mechanic that allows a creature without flying to block a creature with flying.
Correct. Blue-white flyers is a traditional archetype in limited. Even limited, like constructed, has its archetypes, and blue-white flyers has been a centerpiece of limited since Alpha. This is a thing you're supposed to do.
Now, when we talked basic deck construction, we said, your decks can have anywhere between like as few as 18 lands, all the way up to possibly 30 lands, depending on the format and the deck you're building. But when it comes to draft and sealed, it's a little bit different, Jerry. The numbers are kind of more locked in and narrow, correct?
Correct. The go-to number I tell to brand new drafters and sealers, 23 spells, 17 lands. You really can't go wrong with that.
Yep, and that gets you your 40 card deck. Now, it is a 40 card minimum. You can play with more, but Jerry, what's the issue with playing with, say, a 60 card deck in a 40 card deck format?
Well, when you're only given 45 cards, you start diluting your deck with much weaker cards. And because you only have only so many copies of powerful rares, you're taking away your chances of drawing those bomb rares that you pulled.
Yep, so even though you possibly instinctively want to build that 60 card deck, keep that in mind. Don't water down what your deck is wanting to do because all this card could work. Also, you're going to end up with cards that just aren't playable in your deck based on the color pie that you end up in.
Correct. If the mana is not supportive in the set, then the mana just won't. It just was. It won't work. For example, Strixhaven, I would only play two colors. I would pick my class and stick with that, because the only mana fixing you have in the entire set that is even playable for, easy access to mana are the snarls at the rares, and then the common cycle of scrylands.
Yep.
So that's it. I mean, there's a couple other rainbow lands, but both of those rainbow lands, without getting too in deep into it, are just neither of them have been really playable when trying to force a third or fourth color into your deck.
Yeah, and the Scrylands we're talking about here, it is not the rare cycle like we had in Theros. These are lands that they enter the battlefield tapped. They can tap for either one of two colors, or for four mana, You may tap this land and then scry one.
Yep.
So
They're the campus lands.
there you
They're
go,
the diff
yeah.
they're the different campi
Yep.
campuses. I don't know.
Campuses?
Yeah, that's a weird word.
Campusi? Yeah.
Campusi. All right. They're the different campusi for the whole format. So those are at common, which is actually really cool. I mean, that's when you have a dual land cycle at the common level, it at least makes it more applicable for you to play a multicolored deck.
Yeah.
And that's become the normative in recent sets.
Yep. And you may end up occasionally with a land that can tap for one mana of any color or fix, like Hall of Oracles can do some fixing in your rare spot. Sometimes you end up with artifacts that can tap for mana as well. But again, that varies set from set. So just keep an eye on that. And don't feel locked into a set based on a promo you get or even your early draft picks. It is okay and sometimes smart to shift what your deck is a few cards into your initial draft, right, Jerry?
Correct. If you're just not getting the cards needed to support the rare that you pulled in your first pack, you do need to pivot over to what you're getting.
Yeah.
Like,
And
you'll notice it when people are passing cards to you that, oh man, I'm in Lorehold, but I'm getting all these green cards and all the red cards are gone. Well, I guess you're not in Lorehold. You're probably going to be in either Witherbloom or Quandrix.
yep. So Jerry, what are these schools you're talking about with Strixhaven?
So in Strixhaven, for the limited format, they definitely are forcing the five enemy colors, but instead of using the guilds from Ravnica, they're named after different houses, sort of like Harry Potter, because the set's definitely based on Harry Potter in some form or fashion.
Right.
You have Lorehold, which is red and white. You have Prismari, you're blue and red. Quandrix, blue and green. Silverquill, white and black, and Witherbloom, green and black.
Yeah, go Witherbloom.
Go with what the packs give you.
Exactly, 100%. Go with what the
Yeah.
packs give you.
The good thing that Wizards has been doing, like they've been doing poorly with Constructed. Like, we all know this, but Limited has been great.
Yep.
There hasn't there they have not designed a poor Limited set in a while now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really trying to rack my brain here. The one that was really awkward was Ikoria. That's because cycling was kind of busted. But besides that, I could go all the way back to Oath of the Gatewatch and tell you that all of those draft sets and sealed sets were very fun and very good. They were very balanced. Nothing was extremely, overpowering besides your usual rare or mythic bombs.
And one of the things I really like about Limited is that all you need is, what, 12 to $15, and you can sit down and play. You don't have to spend a few hundred bucks on a deck that may or may not get banned. You don't have to worry about someone else who has spent, in the high hundreds or thousands, like I said before, the deep pockets. This is a sit down hangout. And not only that, but it's a very fun format to play with people too. So definitely check out Limited if you have not. It's really fun to sit down with your friends and just do a draft, or even do sealed. But aside from playing in person, Jerry, say we can't go out. We don't have the time to go out. How else can I play Magic the Gathering?
Well, we have several different online clients, some run by Wizards of the Coast and some run by third-party simulators.
Okay. The first one here, the main one I think a lot of people are introduced to is Magic Arena. And this is a newer program that is re released by Wizards. It's been out now, I think, what, 5 years? Run about 4 or 5 years.
Something like that. That includes the beta and everything,
Yep.
certainly.
It is a wonderful client for newer players. It steps you through all the phases that we discussed in our previous episodes. It pulls up the triggered abilities for all the cards, and it's really easy. There's not a lot I would say you really have to remember to do on your own, other than thinking about the plays you're about to make and ensuring you don't click through your attack phase. Outside of that, it's very intuitive, and also it is very pleasing to watch. There's a lot of really cool visuals they have. They have different like challenge trees you can go up. They have a ranked ladder for you to climb from bronze all the way up into mythic, and then it starts ranking you in the top 1200. And that's just a really good feeling to crack into mythic that first time and be like, oh, I did something fantastic, because it is a grind to get the mythic. And then to see yourself start saying, I'm top 1000 in Magic Arena right now, or I'm top 1500 100 on Magic Arena right now. It's a nice feel good. And a good thing too about Arena is with it being sponsored by Wizards of the Coast and also with the COVID restrictions, it is the premier client for your standard and historic events, including Players Tour level events or Mythic Championship, the Pro Tour. And you can actually play pro players on Magic Arena.
Yep, the client is fantastic in that regard. They're still working out some bugs here and there, but it has definitely grown a long way since, you know, from 5 years ago.
Yep.
It's draft and sealed are fantastic. It is easy to handle. You very user-friendly as compared to our next client.
Yep.
But
well, before we get into our next client, how do we get cards in Arena?
Oh boy. Okay, so this is the downside.
Yep.
So you get cards in Arena by the wild card system. If you're familiar with any other online card game, this shouldn't be a surprise to you. But with every 6 packs you open, you get a wild card, a rare wild card, meaning you can craft any single rare with that wild card.
Yes.
Then you have, after 5 rares, is a mythic. So you get a mythic wild card, and then it resets your cycle every 6 packs. So every 6 packs you open, you get a rare or mythic, and then on top of that, you have in your packs, you'll get occasional rare and mythic wild cards as well. And you'll also get common and uncommon wild cards sporadically.
Yes.
Like, from what I remember, I have like 400 uncommon wild cards and 600 common wild cards.
Yep.
Something like that. So I can build at least the commons and uncommons from every single set if I wanted to.
Yeah. Now, in order to get packs, you have to use real money to buy gems. This is the, like, if you were to just start out and you wanted to get packs, you would buy gems to then use those gems to buy packs. In these packs, it is not like a standard booster pack or there's no set boosters or collector boosters on Magic Arena. There's only your booster pack. And it has 1 rare or mythic, 2 uncommons, and 5 spots for commons. Remember though, like Jerry said, one of those common spots or uncommon spots or even your rare slash mythic spot can be replaced with a wild card. But you are rewarded with wild cards for the more packs you open. Another way you can get packs is by spending gold. And you can earn gold by completing daily challenges, playing a certain number of games throughout the week, and also playing in different events. And there's a few events where you can earn gems as well. I would say the best way to build a collection and invest as little as money as possible is drafting. Would you disagree?
Oh no, I was actually going to say that. Like, the client is perfect for drafters, because in the draft you can still complete your challenges with your draft.
You can complete your challenges, and there is a ranked system for that as well. And at the end of every month, you get rewards based on your rank. So if you're silver, if you're gold, if you're plat, your platinum, diamond, or mythic, you get packs at the end of the month, and I think you get some currency too, like gold coin.
Something like that. Usually about it's based on your rank.
Yeah.
You'll get enough gold. Like if you hit platinum, I think you get 4,000 gold coins. Something like that.
Yeah, so that. And they have 2 different styles you can play. You can play traditional, which is best of 3, or you have best of 1. When it comes to best of 1, it is definitely more cutthroat. People play the fastest, most broken decks they can. Tybalt's Trickery is one of the biggest combos on there. Do some research into that so then you understand it. You'll see some weird things. But for that normal feel of Magic, I would say there is the traditional way. And you can challenge your friends now. This was a thing that took a while to gather, but you can challenge your friends and you can play with them. A downside to Magic Arena is there is no trading. You cannot trade cards between players. And yeah, the only way you can get individual cards is by using your wild cards. And the only way to get your wild cards is by opening packs. And a majority of times, the way to get packs is by spending money. It is a little bit of an investment. To give you an idea, for me to get every card in a set, it's normally about $200 to $225. Not bad in the grand scheme of things, but still, if you're grinding hard and you really want to try to build the best decks, that's what you're going to do. They try to compensate you when it comes to bannings. If a card gets banned, then they will give you the wild cards of that rarity. The downside to bannings is the rest of your deck you can't do anything else with. There's no dusting mechanic. There's no way to convert, like, oh, I have all these uncommons, commons or whatnot. I can't turn them into wild cards. A nice system they have is once you have four copies of a card, you will no longer get any more copies of that card. All extra copies of those cards go into like a chest, and then that can grant you wilds, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then if you have all the mythics and the rares, then the rare or mythic spot turns into wild cards or a small amount of gems. So there's that as well. All in all, Magic Arena is a fantastic client. It is free to download, available on Windows, iOS, and now on Android.
Yes. My opinion on Magic Arena, this is the best client for limited play, which we just talked about.
100%.
This is the best client for that.
All right, let's get to the next one, and I would say the best one for constructed play.
Yes.
That being Magic Online. Jerry, what is Magic Online, and how is it different?
Magic the Gathering Online is all-encompassing of every card ever printed is on here, and it includes all of the constructed formats. It does have limited formats. However, I would stick to Arena with that one. You get to play your Modern here, your Legacy, Vintage, your Pauper. Whatever you want is available here. The difference here is the card economy here is much better than Arena. Rental services have been the biggest thing in the last 2 years, where I can pay a subscriber fee to some rental service and I get access to any card I want.
Yeah. For, depending on the service you're using, I go with Mana Traders. Mana Traders is a fantastic, easy to use service. I've walked through multiple people on how to use Mana Traders just by sharing screens. It's like, okay, this is how you submit your deck. This is where you rent your cards. They send you a message then within less than 5 minutes. You get a message from them. A trade is initiated and you can pull all the cards and you can play with them. And then once you're done, turn them back in and you're good to go for the rest of the month. They have different tiers, which will limit the value of your rental as well as how many cards you can rent. And one big thing to note also is whenever you do well on Magic Online, because there's not just constructed, like major constructed tournaments like qualifiers, but there's also what's called leagues. There's no ranked system on Magic Online, but they do have leagues. It is a 5-round event. And as long as you win at least 2 matches, you start winning their currency, which is tickets. Tickets is everything when it comes to Magic Online. Tickets can be used to buy cards of your own from vendors, to enter into events, and tickets can also be sold for real cash to vendors. You can actually make money playing Magic Online. Back in the days before, when chests actually had really good cards, which is one of the things you could win, people would play Magic Online as their job, and they would sell their chests, and that would pay their bills, their rent, mortgage, whatever it is. And they did great at it, on top of anything they got from streaming or whatever else.
During that time, they really didn't have streaming. Like, that's how lucrative it was.
Yeah, I built up a really good collection so that whenever I used my rental service, I could get a lower subscription. The most important thing for, I would say, almost any constructed format is your mana base. It's your most expensive part. I was able to sell my cards, and I netted about $1,000. Magic Online also has the ability to direct challenge, to trade cards amongst friends, and like Jerry said, just the multitude of formats that you can play on Magic Online. Some of the downsides, though, there's no like auto tapping of mana. You do have to tap your own mana, okay? You have to set the stack appropriately. Some decks are really dependent. We talked about this stack before. If you have multiple abilities go on the stack, you choose how they resolve. Some decks are very dependent on how you resolve those abilities. Keep that in mind.
If you've ever had any difficulty understanding the stack, play Magic the Gathering Online. It visualizes it better than anything else, and it allows you to get hands-on with it. Rather, it makes you get hands-on with it.
Yeah. Now, will you mess up? Yes. Will it cost you a game? More than likely. But you will learn. That's the biggest thing. That's the biggest takeaway from that, is you are learning how to manipulate the stack. And if you have questions, as always, reach out to us. We will answer any questions you have. We try to be as active as possible on social media to address any questions that comes our way as quickly as possible. So one way to get cards is by drafting, or is by doing your rental services. Another way is you can buy packs with tickets, and then you get to keep those, or you can buy from other online vendors, which they have their own store for trading and buying, as well as just other people. You can trade them tickets for cards, and it has their own value. If you go to, say, MTG Goldfish, it'll give you a ticket value for a card. Now, what's weird, you will see, while you are on MTG Goldfish, is some cards are significantly more expensive or cheaper on paper vice Magic Online. I'll give you an example right now. I'm looking at a deck that I play on paper and Modern in tabletop, so actual cards. It's $950. Magic Online, it's 234 tickets, or $234 if you wanted to buy the deck. Drastically different there on prices, but some of the cards, depending on their play online, vice to play in paper, will change.
Yeah, you definitely get some of those weirdo cards that are really expensive online as well, but that's very few and far between, and it's based on cards being opened by vendors and players alike.
Here's an example. Now I'll give two. The card Kozilek, Butcher of Truth is a $90 card in paper. On Magic Online, it is 7 tickets or $7.
Been a ton of copies out there.
Mm-hmm. Plague Engineer is a 15 ticket card on Magic Online, but on paper is only $5.
Yep, so, not enough copies out there.
Yep, and here we go. Here's a huge one. Grand Abolisher is a 0.9 tickets or 90 cents on Magic Online. It's $30 in paper.
Yep.
So you can see that the market is different. And that's one thing that is nice. The cards are significantly cheaper. Playing Legacy, if you are curious about playing Legacy, the $1,000 or the easily multi-$1,000 format, I would say probably the $3,000 format now. It is, again, the same price, I would say around here, a few hundred tickets. It's not expensive to do. You can play Vintage. You can play with Black Lotus and Moxes online for pennies on the dollar for renting or for owning. But what are some other sims that we can play Magic on? Jerry, we showed Cockatrice when we did the videos of So You Want to Play Magic. How does that work?
So these other sims, such as Cockatrice or OCTGN, whatever have you, they are 100% user-operated. There's no... All that's available is a table for you to play on online and a card pool. You build the deck. It has an automatic shuffler for you whenever you search through the deck, and that's it. You manually control every single thing. Just like as if you had just like in real world, like how I shuffle the deck, put it down, and I draw 7 cards. You have to individually draw 7 cards online. You have to draw your card for the turn. You have to go through your phases individually and announce that you're going through your phases like you would in the real world. These type of platforms are great for playtesting with friends because they're 100% free with total access to everything. You've spent absolutely nothing to use this client. I could get any of the guys from the Snapcast, plan a day, and say, hey, we're going to jump on Cockatrice. I need to run through 100 matches with one particular deck, 20 matches against 5 different decks. And we could do that for free. And it's quick, it's easy, it takes away the minutia of actually shuffling the physical cards and lets you run through the games quickly.
Yep.
The downsides of it, playing against unknown people. If someone doesn't know the rules of the game and they believe they're right, they're going to argue with you about it. And you would have to call a judge. So you have to go get a moderator. And it takes extra steps where, as in MTGO and MTG Arena, you can sit there and complain all you want, but the rules are set in stone with how the game is programmed.
So that's the caution with the Sims, is that the rules are enforced only by the players. And it's possible for you to not get a genuine game out of it, depending on your opponent, if it's a random opponent. But again, the benefit, though, of free testing without the hassle of proxying out a deck or building out the decks or anything like that, and just typing in a deck list and going, is a wonderful thing. But definitely multiple avenues that you can use to play online. And then, of course, one thing you could do is a simple webcam at home setup to look down at your playmat. And you can play on Discord or whatever screen sharing application you have on your computer. play with anybody around the world through the various Facebook groups exist, like the Magic the Gathering Players Group. They have a wonderful Discord you can go into, open to all of their members, and then you can just say, hey, looking to play Standard, looking to play this, and you're more than welcome to get an invite then and play a game with someone you don't even know, and just have a good time, chill, and play Magic. So be sure to check them out, and of course, they can answer any questions you have from the basic beginner question all the way up to you prepping for your first Grand Prix. All right, so COVID is over in our mythical world now. We can finally go out and play at a local game store. But how do I know if my town has one?
Well, lucky for us, Wizards of the Coast has an app on their website that allows you to search for game stores that support WPN play.
Yes, they have a store locator. Type in your zip code or your city, and it'll pop up stores in the nearest 50 miles or so. And at that point, go check it out. I will warn you, not every game store is the same. Some game stores have a wonderful fostering environment for new players, for different formats of players. But you will occasionally run into the game store that has the good old players crowd and aren't too welcoming to newer players. They're super spiky. They're super competitive. If you come in with casual, they may kind of poke fun a little bit at your deck or possibly even just downright insult it. And sometimes the owner's okay with that because, well, these are my regulars. They buy the packs and the boxes. I'd rather just say, okay, yeah, okay, you know, it's just them, than be like, hey, guys, how about you be more welcoming and less rude?
It happens. You got some bad eggs, but don't let the bad eggs take away from the experience of the game. Let me help you all out. If you're in the Chicago area or Northwest Indiana, GameStorm Inc., Lamont, Illinois. There you go. That's your LGS. Just go there.
Yep.
Best one. We have the best of both worlds. We have the spiky players, but the spiky players are all nice. We want to get everyone spiky. We want everyone to spike everyone. We love that. We have a modern crowd, standard crowd, draft crowd, a massive commander crowd. Like, I didn't realize how big commander was at our game store. These guys are firing off 40, 45 people between online and the few people that do show up to the game store. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. There are a lot of game stores out there that do foster good behavior.
100%. And then if you're going to go ahead and shout out for your area, I'll go ahead and give mine down here in Hampton. If you're in the Hampton or Peninsula area, we have two Atomic Comic Emporiums, one in Hampton, one in Newport News, both of which fantastic stores. In fact, Jerry, that's where we met.
Yes, it's exactly where we met. We met at Ace on Mercury Boulevard.
Yep. And it is a very great store. Wonderful crowd. Sadly, again, like, we don't have the competitive play. They're really cautious about having competitive play because there have been some stores that have lost their WPN or Wizards Play Network status because of that. When a store loses their Wizards Play Network status, you need to kind of be cautious about that store. It could be something as innocent as doing events during COVID when they shouldn't be, or there could be other things happening behind the scenes that might not make it a welcoming environment. I would say if you're down south side, so in the other cities, Chesapeake, Virginia Beach, Norfolk, then I would check out Atlantis Comics and Games and Tower of Games, both of which were outstanding stores. So multiple stores that you can go to. Yeah, I'm in a larger city, but Jerry, well, we had seven game stores that we could go to.
Yeah,
each one had their own unique crowd.
Yeah, we had both the Aces, Kings, Tower, both the Atlantis games. There was a place to go on either side of the water at any place on the peninsula.
And then, of course, I have to give a shout-out to Snapcast team member Matt Davis and his fantastic store down in Kingsland, Georgia, Deep Dive Games. Go check them out. Again, as we continue to open up, they will be able to have that nice sanctioned play. Wonderful store, very welcoming. These guys, the owners are very down to earth, and any style of play is more than welcome. Last topic I want to talk about here. Now that you know where to play, you know the sets, you know the formats, you know the kind of deck you want to build, how do I get my cards? What's the best way to buy your cards? What do you think, Jerry? What would you recommend? I'm brand new to Magic. I want to get cards so I can play. What's the best way to go about it?
I would recommend you look up deck lists first on MTG Goldfish or MTG Top 8. decide what deck you want, and then I would go through tcgplayer.com and buy the individual pieces from best rated sellers from that website. That
Yes.
would be the best way to go about buying.
Yep, I could not agree more. Opening packs is a blast. Okay, I'm very addicted to it. I currently am sitting on every modern legal pack right now from 8th edition to current, waiting to open them for a series.
No. Now that is for buying single cards and buying individual packs. If I want to buy a lot of product, say boxes or cases, I would go to a big name store at that point. TCG Player has had a couple of unscrupulous people try to sell cases or boxes at really low prices, and it turns out that the person was not honest about it. Now, part of that was because the person wasn't a verified seller. That's a whole nother issue. But because that threat exists, I would rather go to a big chain to buy lots of product, such as cases and boxes, such as your Channel Fireball on the West Coast, your East Coast, your Star City Games, and then your GameStorm Hot Sauce Games, Pastimes, GameStorm at Chicagoland, Midwest, United States.
All fantastic. If you're down in the Southeast, you can go to Cool Stuff Games, and a nice thing they have too is free 2-day delivery to any one of their stores out of their Orlando hub.
I will
Now,
tell you this, where not to buy from at all. No eBay, no Amazon.
hundred, oh, you
Just
beat me
don't.
to it.
No eBay, no Amazon. That's just a there's a hovel of nonsense. There's issues with delays in orders. There's issues with people even sending out the stuff to begin with. Then there's issues of honest and integral sellers. Too much going on there. Don't buy cards from any card game. Like, if Magic turns out not to be your thing, but you turn around and play like Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Vanguard Card Fight, whatever have you, don't buy from eBay. Take that away from this episode.
Yep. Now, back to PAX real quick. Okay, PAX is a gamble. That's like the best way to put it. It's like some of the most legalized gambling you can do because you can spend $4 on a pack and get nothing out of it. Or if you start getting your older packs, we'll go Ravnica City of Guilds is a $70 booster pack right now. Yeah, you can pull a $100 card out of it, $200 card, or you can pull a 10-cent card. Just buy the cards you want. Unless, you do have the available funds. Yeah, get a booster box and crack it. It is a blast. But if you're buying cards or you're looking to buy packs for certain cards, save your money, just buy the cards. Now you've bought all these cards and you start to build up a collection. And then you realize, man, I got a lot of cards here. I got 3 5-row long boxes full of cards. How do I offload those? How do I sell them? What avenues do I have? You can go to your local game store. But here's something that a lot of people need to keep in mind when it comes to selling to a game store. They have overhead, okay? They have to make a profit off of your card. You may have a $40 card. You are not going to get $40 from that store. They will offer you one of two things: store credit or cash. Cash is probably going to come anywhere between 30 to 50% of the value of the card. So on a $40 card, you're looking at about $12 to $20 cash that you're going to get. Or they could possibly offer you store credit, which could be anywhere between 40 and 60%, depending on the store you go to. Do not try to insult them by saying, "Oh, well, this place will pay me more," because they're going to look at you and say, "Okay, good, go sell there." They have the prices set up the way they do because they have to make money. Does it suck? Absolutely. It's also going to change based on the condition of your card. The best way for you to get the max value out of your card is to sell it yourself with online services such as Facebook groups, or you can even sell yourself on TCG Player. You're going to be undercutting the price on those still because you're probably not going to get full price because everybody else is selling the cards for cheaper. Keep that in mind.
There is a way to sell to game stores, though, and make it a nice little side hustle where you come out on top. Did you know that, Rob?
Yes, I did. Go on.
Okay. The way I did it was you play one modern deck. Say you play your one modern deck, and that's it. Don't need to buy new cards for it. It's modern. Format, yeah, the format never rotates. You get to play these cards forever. So you continue to play this deck over and over and over again. You're winning additional credit and such. And you use that credit from the store to get a box from them. You then can crack that box. That box goes to the owner, and you say, let's say you pulled some of those high dollar rares and such. The only thing you spent was the store credit entry fee that you paid and the free entry you got once every 10 rounds or so, because all stores tend to give some type of free entry after playing so many times. And you can actually come out on top with the boxes that you crack because of the store credit that you accumulated through playing Modern or whatever format you have, as long as you're not buying constant cards to keep that deck doing different things.
Yep.
I did it with Ad Nauseam combo this past year. I came out up after all the math was said and done from individual cards that I picked up from the store via just getting packs from winning. I came out up $600. So you can certainly do it that way.
And you can also sell to your other players. Be respectful about it. Don't sell inside of a local game store. You are affecting their business at that point. Go outside, go like coffee shop or something like that, and you could sell there. Also, at your major events, your GPs, your opens, you are not allowed to do cash transaction for cards. Trading is absolutely encouraged. Buying and selling from non-vendors is strictly prohibited. So then we get to trading cards. What's the best way to go about trading?
All right, so you're in my bread and butter here. There's a couple things you have to take into account with trading. The perceived value of the card, the actual value of the card. Perceived meaning is, what does this player perceive this card's value as? Do they need to play four copies of it, or do they just want one copy of it to go into a collection that they're trying to get a hold of? Actual value, the retail price that it's going for right now on whatever site you choose to use. Most people like to use TCG Player Mid. I could respect that. That seems to be a pretty good choice. As long as all of your card prices are from the same source, then that is considered a fair and balanced deal there. When making a trade itself, how much cardboard are you giving versus the amount of cardboard they're giving? That is something I take into account. You know, if I'm giving you four pieces of cardboard for one piece of cardboard, and the price of your one piece of cardboard still exceeds my four pieces, I might try to push that, you know, hey, I might be trading for that $100 piece of cardboard, but I've got $90 right here in four pieces of cardboard. I think this is still a fair trade. Then, the last thing you have to take into account is the condition of the cards. A banged up card, damages, nicks, scratches, bends, folds, warping from foiling, is going to decrease the value of the card. My favorite example from one of the trades I made a while back, I traded for an Underground Sea a couple of years ago. At the time, it was $200. I traded a playset of Stoneforge Mystics for an Underground Sea. At the time, they were at their height of their popularity in Legacy, so they were running about 200 to 240, whatever site you wanted to, as a playset. And then the Underground Sea being about 200, 250, give or take at the time. This was about 5, 10 years ago, something along the lines, before the Legacy spike hit. To this day, people would be like, you actually made that trade? I'm like, yeah, because that's how it works. The perceived value and the actual value of the cards at the time versus the amount of cardboard I gave and the condition the Underground Sea was in. His was in lightly played, and my stone forges were near mint.
I think the best trade I made in my favor, Narset Transcendent Tutor came out, the Planeswalker Narset. And whenever cards come out, that first week or so, their prices are very volatile. You don't know, like, because it's all speculation pricing at that point. I traded one Narset for a playset of Flooded Strands at the time. If you look now, that Narset Planeswalker is not that expensive. Those Flooded Strands, I definitely made out in the long run. Trading for staples in a format is never a bad idea. Especially if it's something like Fetchlands, Shocklands, something that is going to be used across multiple formats also, especially like with your fetches. That's always a safe investment. When is a good time to trade or sell? Okay. When a set starts getting close to rotation, you really need to start looking. Do I need these cards anymore? And try to get rid of them before the price drop. You can go to a local game store and possibly get some good money out of it. but they may be thinking along the same lines. I've definitely seen some stores go, oh, we're not buying anything from this set anymore, just because it's about to rotate. Makes sense. And that is something to keep in mind, is your collection is almost like stock. It will fluctuate in value up and down, depending on what's going on. You'll see as Paper Magic comes back, you will get into seasons for your Eternal formats, like Modern Season. Modern card prices are going up because everyone's buying Modern now. Or Modern card prices are going down because the next series of events isn't going to be Modern, but instead we're going to be playing Standard or Pioneer. So that does change. Just keep an eye on it. Don't beat yourself up if you end up losing money on a deck that gets banned, or, you know, cards rotate and you forgot to sell them. It is what it is.
So yeah, that pretty much narrows it down on the trading bit there. Mostly Standard cards tend to lose value a little bit longer. So if you can trade Standard cards into your Eternal format cards, you are winning out in the long run.
Yes.
Like Rob said earlier, your fetch lands and your shock lands are always safe investments. And then any copy of archetype staples, your lightning bolts, it's always a safe trade. Lightning bolt could be printed 20 times and it's still a $5 common. Still is to this day, because it's always a playable card in every format it's in. Cryptic Command's another one of those fantastic cards. Path to Exile, Tarmogoyf. If you're playing mid-range, you're playing Tarmogoyf. It will always hold at least a reasonable price tag.
And one thing I will say before we close out here, if you're going to do any buying, if you're going to do any trading, cards, selling cards, hit up your local game stores first, okay? Without local game stores, Magic doesn't exist in paper. Don't go to Target. Don't go to Walmart first thing. Go check out that game store. Yeah, it might be 50 cents more per pack, but you get to build that rapport with that local game store owner, because they know Target has cheaper packs, or they know Walmart has cheaper packs. But what Walmart and Target don't offer you, though, is a play environment and a community to play with. And that's what your local game store is for. So definitely go support your local game stores before you support your big box stores. Now, there may be instances where buying singles, right, you got to go to TCG Player. You need to go to Cool Stuff. Cool. I will ask, if you can and you have the time, check out that local game store to help them out. But I think that's going to do it for us on this topic. We covered a lot of amazing topics again. I really hope that this So You Want to Play Magic series is helping y'all out. And we're going to make sure that these are tagged in their own individual set, so it's very easy to find on our website. You can find us at thesnapcast.com, all of your podcasting outlets. We're on social media. And just reach out if you have any questions, and you may not want to ask that question in an open forum like Facebook or Twitter. Direct message us. At Rob_Snapcast is where I'm at. Jerry, where can they reach you?
You can reach me on Twitter at SnapcasterJerry.
There you go. And again, we will be there to help you out. And if we don't know the answer, we've been playing for a very long time and we know a lot of people in the community. We know from the Star City Circuit, a couple members on the pros, all the way down to your casual tabletop people. We can find the answers that you need. So don't be afraid to ask. But that's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you again, everyone, for listening. Another fantastic episode in the books. Can't wait to be back next week.
Oh, snap. Yeah.